I'm Melanie Tate. You're listening to Books and Arts now with you 6 days a week. Coming up, how the most shocking of crimes inspired women across the world to join hands and create some really gorgeous speculative fiction. A horrific event in India spurred a cross-cultural partnership that developed into a book written and illustrated by women for teen readers from India and Australia. The book is called Eat the Sky, Drink the Ocean, and I'm joined by two of the editors, Australian writer Kirsty Murray, who's in our Melbourne studio, and Indian writer, editor and publisher Anita Roy, who's on the phone from Delhi. Kirsty, let's start with you. What was this horrific event that set this collaboration in motion?
Well, it was actually two horrific events that coincided. In September 2012, Jill Maher, who everybody here at the ABC knew and loved, died a horrible death, the death we fear for all our daughters. And in Delhi, in December, there was a particularly horrific rape and murder of a beautiful young Indian girl who was innocently on her way home and got taken onto a bus and really brutally gang raped, and then she died in a Singapore hospital. I mean, the whole world was ill about that particular crime. It got international media, and of course here in Melbourne, people were heartbroken about what happened to Jill Maher. And there were vigils in Delhi over the Delhi rape. There were vigils here in Melbourne at the same time about, you know, this longing to make a better world for our daughters and our sisters. And it was very moving as we were actually, Anita and I were talking about doing another project together. We've known each other for some time, and Anita published an earlier book of mine called The Lilliputians in India, which was called India Dark in Australia. And so we were talking about the next thing we wanted to do together, but it was like there were these huge massing clouds of emotional distress over these two incidences, and that made us think particularly about how can things be better? How do women frame these conversations? I think Anita should actually talk about that side of it too from her perspective, because she was the one that was so insistent that this anthology had to be all female, because we did talk about having... Yes, you did. You said it has to be all women for this collection.
So, Anita, why so? Why was it so important to you that it's all women for this collection?
Well, partly because I work for a feminist publishing house, Young Ziban, and what we do is try and give a space for female voices particularly to be heard. And partly because what Kirsty and I talked about and what we got very excited about was this idea of actually asking writers to write speculative fiction. And I think science fiction and fantasy and graphic novels are all genres which are very dominated by male writers. And we thought it would be really interesting to see what women would do inside a genre like that and how they would kind of reclaim it as their own. How women can reimagine the world. And I think that speculative fiction idea of what if things were different? How would things be different? You know, how can we reimagine a society and a world better and more equitable? That seemed to be a very exciting prospect. It was certainly something that all of our contributors immediately got on board with. I mean, it was like a sort of editor's dream. You ask someone, dream up a list of all of your favorite writers and then ask them to write something for you. And I think every single one of them said yes.
Now, you also asked, as well as the book be speculative fiction, as well as being written by all women from across India and Australia, you also wanted these women to work together on the book. So was it also about forging international alliances? And why was this an important part of the project?
When we started working on this, it was such an unusual left-field idea too. And we were approaching really established, successful authors within their genres, and we needed to fund it. We were lucky enough to apply and receive a creative partnerships with Asia Grant. And I was quite pleased that the criteria for that for the grant said we would favour something that was collaborative. And Anita and I said, oh, how collaborative can we get? Let's go to an even higher level and ramp it up and make every everybody work together, not just the writers and illustrators, but let's get the writers and writers collaborating, and let's have a party with in cyberspace on Skype and email with 20 women. So it was a pretty wild way to approach putting a book together, really.
So how did this collaboration actually work, Anita? Was it completely Skype-based?
It worked mostly in cyberspace, a little bit with phone calls, a lot of emailing and backing and forthing. And basically what we said to each of the contributors, I mean, Payal, Dhar and Kirsty and I, the editors, kind of sat together like, I don't know, I call it a kind of cross between fairy godmothers and Indian matchmakers looking for good, suitable, arranged marriages to these ladies and trying to match people that we thought would just have a good time together and whose work we knew would kind of speak to each other. One of the things that I think took us all by surprise, although I'm not quite sure why, writers and creative artists are generally very solitary beings. You know, they kind of go into a corner and sit on their own and do their thing in their head. And we were a bit worried at the beginning as to how they would take to this idea of having a kind of mate to do their stuff with. And I think that one of the things we discovered was not that they all have a really, really good time with it, bouncing ideas back and forth, getting feedback on their own stories. In Kirsty and Manjula Padmanabhan's case, actually coming up with a play, which they sort of jointly wrote. It was also, I think, part of the thing about it being an all-women collection. I'm not sure if it were men in there, they would have been quite so open and quite so cooperative and quite so free and easy with their ideas and their time and their thoughts.
I wonder, though, and this is a question for both of you, perhaps, Kirsty, you can answer it first. As editors, was it a tough job bringing everyone together, picking who might work together, etc.?
It felt harder when we started, actually. As Anita said, a lot of people fell in love with each other and some people just surprised us by how intense their working relationship were. Some people, for all sorts of other reasons, didn't get a chance to build much between them. But we didn't want to be didactic and say, you have to do this and this is what, you know, we expect of you. We really trusted in people to come up with whatever they did. So there are a couple of stories within the collection where they were more or less solo and they just waved at each other in cyberspace. So, oh, hi, I'm over here, I'm doing this. And that was fine. And then there are other people, particularly, obviously, if it's a writer-illustrator dynamic, because there are 73 pages of graphics in the book. Their collaborations were very intense and took a lot of time. And the play script that I wrote with Manjula was an amazing adventure. For Australians who don't know her work, she's incredibly well known in India, and she won the Onassis Prize in 1998 for an original play script. And I thought, I've got to write a play with Manjula and she's so clever. But I learned so much from working with her.
So when you're writing a play with a prize-winning playwright, how did that dynamic work for you and her, Kirsty? How did you know, the practicalities of writing a play together?
Well, Manjula said right from the outset, I don't want to collaborate with anybody. And I said, we're meant to sort of collaborate. And she said, let's just play my rules. I went, okay. Her rules was to play this game that she called Consequences. I called it Exquisite Corpse. And sometimes it felt like Blind Assassin. The rules were that she would send me a piece of play script with no notes, with nothing. It was just maybe 200 words of these characters talking to each other. And I would read it and I would then write the next 200 words and send it back to her blind. So we couldn't see. It's like you put it, it's like the children's game that where you tell a part of it and then, or unfold a piece of paper and see that there's another piece and another piece. So we did this over about 3 months to put together a play script, which eventually was about 2,500 words. And it was a really interesting process because you assume things about India and Australia and you assume things about your differences. And in point of fact, there is so much integrated symbiotic relationship happening there. That sounds all too sciencey, but it was like we were thinking things at the same time on different sides of the planet and interconnecting so that it was not as surprising as I thought it would be. When we actually put it together, the characters all made sense and it didn't take as long to edit it as we needed to. And then eventually, after we'd done that, we got on Skype and we had regular Skype meetings and we read it out to each other. And so, yeah, it was a really dynamic collaboration.
So the book itself now is out. Well, it's been out in India. It's been experienced in India. Have certain stories been received differently in the different cultures?
Yeah, well, I'd say that there is a really clear difference from what I've started to read with online reviews and just talking to people about it. There's one particular story called Weft by Alyssa Brugman, which I know here in Australia, the people who've read it are a bit bewildered by it. God, that's a weird story. In India, people laughed about it. They thought it's about a young woman who sells a kidney to get hair extensions. Even though it's written with an Australian voice, I think it worked amazingly well in India. So many journalists, when I was over there last November for the release of the book, said, who is this woman? This story is so contemporary and so topical, because, of course, there is an organ trade in India that is something very alarming. And the idea that you would start to sell your body parts to alter other parts of your body just seemed incredible. So that story, I think, in India floats differently, whereas here the stories that people pick up on, and it's a bit early to say which they'll go for, but they tend to go for the things that you recognise that speak to you.
What do you hope will come out of this book?
I think one of the things that I really hope comes out of it is a lot more discussion and a lot more imaginative and different responses to this question of gender. One of the things that I think has happened in the last 2 years, really kind of triggered by that terrible rape case, is that the discourse around women and girls and their sexuality and safety and all of that has really shifted a lot in the public discourse here, from a question of how do we protect girls, how do we increase safety measures, how do we make them safer, to how do we construct a society where boys and men don't do this. The onus seems to have shifted far much more from protecting women to educating and looking at men and how they behave and how they view themselves, their role in society, and their wives, sisters, strangers on the street, and so on. One of the things that people do think is that feminism is all about being stern and angry and, position taking and not liking men and all of that stuff. But honestly, this collection, I would say, sort of demonstrates a completely different aspect of feminism, which is much truer. It's a dialogue and it's a way of viewing the world. And it's, as you will see from the stories, it can be funny, outer spacey, time travel-y, and all kinds of things. And as Kirsty was saying, you know, there are several of the stories which feature male protagonists.
Kirsty, what about you?
I think very much similar to Anita, you just hope it opens up a conversation, because what I loved about this book is that none of the stories are didactic. None of the stories tell you what to think or how to think. It's not a book for girls. It's a book for people who like to think. And so what I really hope is that it provokes conversation.
Kirsty Murray and Anita Roy, thank you so much for your time today on Books and Arts.
Thank you, Melanie.
Thank you.
Kirsty Murray and Anita Roy, two of the editors of the book Eat the Sky, Drink the Ocean, published by Allen and Unwin. This is Books and Arts on RN. I'm Melanie Tate.